Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I am not your host, but I am filling in for a second while we are going to be talking about relationship advice when conflict becomes addictive. So what we're working on today is how we are passive-aggressive when we want attention. We will start to use conflict or ways to not really say what we want as a way to get attention, and how that can become a sort of constant in a relationship. So and so we will be taking a few callers today to learn more about how conflict shows up in our relationships and how much we choose conflict, and what our strategies are to make sure that we're being seen by being in conflict, or whether we're using conflict to get to know each other better. And joining us now is Dr. Bob Wright, who will be taking us deeper into this question of what to do with conflict in relationships.
George, and I am thrilled to talk about conflict. It's something I used to be afraid of, and I still don't look forward to it. And today we're going to be looking specifically at when conflict becomes addictive. Is it your knee-jerk reaction? Because we are creatures of habit, and conflict very easily becomes a habit, especially when we are having trouble with a thing we call individuation. That's called being your own person. So the people who tend to get lost in conflict as a habit and an addictive activity are having difficulty being their own person, asserting their right to be their own person in a way that never works. Because reacting against the world is being controlled by the outside world. And the real win in conflict is to learn and to grow and to create better partnerships. So that's what we're talking about today. And our first caller is George. He says, how do I best support my partner to stop smoking? Is there anything I can do? Oh, there's a good conflict.
Yeah, so it's been, I guess it's been over a year now that we've kind of been, I've been on this battle of wanting her to stop smoking, and also not knowing how to when to push, how to push, and also it's not my choice. So I'm kind of at, I think most recently, I said something about it, and then I got the silent treatment for a few days, and so then I wonder if that works, or should I give some kind of ultimatum, or what?
Well, isn't this a wonderful situation of resentment? You resent her because caring about her and wanting to be with her requires that you pay the price of putting up with her stinky smoking. If she quits, she's going to resent you because she quit smoking to stay with you. Sure looks like a lose-lose situation, doesn't it?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that far. I didn't think about her resenting me, but she already does.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is you can't get her to quit smoking. I guess you could kidnap her and locker in a smoke-free environment. But you're asking the wrong question. Really, it's how do I support my partner to develop herself to the point where she's willing to take on the addiction of smoking and let go of that really dependable friend? Because when she is smoking, that is something to which she can always turn to relieve her anxiety. It doesn't really get integrated. It's a habit. People smoke more for a reason. Their system becomes accustomed to smoking at certain points of anxiety. So it seems to me that what she needs when she's smoking is actually the opposite of what she's getting from you, which is comfort.
Well, shoot. So then what, how do I, how, but that's like a clash inside of me, because I don't want to comfort her. And then I want to like punish her to get her to stop. I want to like be like, no, this isn't like, this not fair to me, because I'm thinking about, you know, later down the line, it's like my security. I don't want her to die early. I don't want to.
Oh, come on. It just stinks. Forget that.
Bob, I actually like smoking.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So it doesn't stink to you?
Not that. I mean.
Nah, come on.
It's not that bad.
Not that bad.
I like smoking. I get it, you know.
So then why don't you smoke with her?
Because I chose not to. Because it, like, I feel it deteriorate my brain. Because I don't, it, you know, I know it's not good for me. I can feel it in my lungs. It hurts.
Okay.
And I don't want to have lung cancer.
Well, the point is, she has to want to quit smoking.
Yeah. Okay.
What is okay what?
I'm reframing how I'll, you know, go about this in the future. I will try, like, giving her a hug or giving.
Hey, you might ask her, are there any things I can do? Are you open to experimenting with me comforting you in place of your cigarettes at least part of the time? And see if we can't use you quitting smoking to bring us closer together, so that we both get more nourishment out of the relationship.
I can do that, yeah.
You know, I haven't experienced this in a long time, because it's a lot of years since I ever dated, but a couple times I dated women, and sitting around watching them with their dog or their cat, I was envious and jealous of the dog or the cat getting stroked and petted and played with. And isn't it really, what would happen if that anxiety that went into those cigarettes went into you two playing and interacting more?
Yeah.
See, I grew up hating smoking. My mom used to smoke only in the bathroom, which was a real blessing, except that the towel stunk to high heaven. And my mother's mother never saw her smoking. My mother's mother, my grandmother, had no idea that my mother smoked. And they talked every night of the week.
Huh.
So my mom was embarrassed by the fact she smoked, obviously, and she finally quit somewhere in late grade school. But I hate smoking. And that's probably the biggest disadvantage of the fact that we're on our way to France. And the French have finally stopped letting people smoke in restaurants. So I wish you luck with that, George.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Bob.
Okay. Our next caller is John. And John, talk to me. What's up?
Hello, Dr. Bob. Well, going to the point about conflict in relationships and whether it's addictive, I've actually noticed a pattern with myself in relationships in that I actually feel more engaged and that people or my partner cares more for me when we're fighting or we're in conflict. And when things are easygoing and smooth and we're getting along really well, I don't feel as engaged. I don't feel as connected with him. And it doesn't feel as deep. So there's something in conflict that feels better.
You bet there is. You bet there is. That's why Judith and I call our next book The Heart of the Fight, The Couple's Guide to 15 Common Fights, What They Mean and How They Can Bring You Closer. Because there is conflict in human interaction going on all the time. And what you call good times are simply the times that nothing has pissed you off enough to really get your dander up. And if you take a good hard look, you're going to find that you're overlooking a lot of things you don't like and that you two are not fully engaged in getting the best out of the relationship with each other. So when there's conflict, you feel closer. It's a natural byproduct. The question is, for you, is how do you come to overlook so much that you're not thrilled with?
Well, you know, there's I guess the thing that worries me about this is that when I look back at my relationship with my mother, it was very conflictive. She wasn't someone who said, I love you. She wasn't somebody who was caring or affectionate toward me. But we had conflict, and my fear is that I see that as a pattern in my relationships, that if the only way I know that my mother cared for me is that there was conflict with her. So that I fear that I bring that into relationships now and that I have to be fighting with someone to think that they care for me. Like actually hearing the words, I love you, doesn't mean as much to me as hearing someone yell at me because they're mad at me. That's what worries me.
Well, there's another challenge, which is, am I engaged with my full yearning all the time? And there's something about conflict that it gets people more fully engaged. And I wouldn't worry about the fact that you feel better in conflict. I would look to have more different kinds of engagement and learn to get through it faster. I mean, a big part of my partnership with Judith is that we conflict and we get through it and we resolve things. And as a matter of fact, we're in the midst of some very touchy contract negotiations right now. And she just pisses me off no end. Because she sees things very differently than I do. And the things that she has to say are like fingernails on a blackboard to me. Now, I know that she needs to say those things, so I encourage her to say them. She has to say them in the face of me rolling my eyes and glaring at her. And they still piss me off, but I know that we need to have them spoken. And through this, we're getting closer. I have more empathy for her point of view. We've had dialogues that we needed to have. The real question for you to ask yourself is, does my conflict lead to resolution? Does it lead to us being closer? Does it lead to us understanding each other better? Are we learning and growing? I wouldn't worry about the conflict. I would worry about unresolved conflict. And I don't mean the traditional sweep it under the carpet kind of resolution. I'm talking about a resolution where each of you has something for which you're fighting. This is one of our first rules of engagement for couples, is fight for something. That's the real question you need to ask yourself. For what am I fighting? And am I making progress? Or am I discovering that what I'm fighting for is a mistake? That's it. I've had fights that have been 2 years to resolution. And the real thing is, do you know how to carry on a conflict through that amount of time? Very few people are that clear about what they're fighting for. Judith and I, when I turned 40, I hit my midlife crisis, and I realized, I've always been very affectionate, and I realized that what I was giving her was what I wanted back. And so we went into counseling, and this was our third time going into counseling. And two out of the three, actually fourth time, one didn't go very far. We didn't do much work. Two of the four counselors we had were trying to talk Judith into divorcing me because they had no clue how to fight the way we fought. And our fights, we trust each other. And I trust Judith. And the last counselor we saw because he had such good insight about me. But we would do double sessions, and occasionally I'd go to the washroom between sessions, and he'd say, "Are you sure you want to stay married to him?" because this is a guy who was in an office with his wife. He was one of the dons of psychoanalysis in Chicago. We used to call him Old Fart. I can't even remember his name. But we didn't care that he didn't understand conflict. What we cared about was that he had very good insight about me and where I was coming from, and we were making progress. So the fact that he was consistently calling the relationship into question with Judith didn't really matter. But that was probably 3, maybe 4 years of one prolonged fight. From the time that I realized I was giving what I wanted to get until the time I started getting what I wanted and realized I had actually been in the way of getting it all along. And so it really most of the world wants to bail and say I made a mistake. They just don't have a clue what it is to carry on a prolonged fight for something for that amount of time. And they don't understand what the rules of engagement are that can keep a couple moving through something like that for that long. So it's resolution, and it's what you're fighting for that you need to ask yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So we have one more caller, Candy. And she says, actually, Candy, tell me, what's up?
Hey, Bob.
Hi.
I think my burning question or the challenge that I'm facing in my relationship with Nelson is this, like, I just feel like a lot of judgment that comes up for me, and at the same time it's sort of like holding a vision for him, and then the conflict of knowing that it doesn't happen overnight. And that I have to be patient and supportive through the process, and like this conflict of like, am I sacrificing myself? You know, just to be like real with my feelings and my frustration, I feel disconnected sometimes in this relationship, and unless I just sort of like say my judgment and get like really truthful. But of course that's sort of scary, and I also have this sense of superiority too, like I feel like I'm superior.
So the real question here is, are you going to be current and up to date with him and see what happens when you deliver your judgments? But it would be useful to see what it is to you, what each of the judgments is to you, because judgments uh-huh. can come from different areas. I married Judith with a profound sense of respect for her, and I had many, many judgments of her. So there's a difference between having judgments of someone whom you respect and judgments of someone whom you don't respect.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good point. I think that's the first thing you've got to sort out.
But the trouble is, for me, is that there's very, and this is where, this is like the, you know, like this is my matrix, and this is my father stuff that comes up in every single relationship. It's like every relationship where I lose respect, and not that I ever really gained it in the first place. You know, it was sort of like this trial period, but I think I was crucifying right from the start. So I know this is about me.
There's two different things. Your work is to deal with the insecurity that causes you to judge defensively. You know, a lot of people come in and they start their personal growth work and they say, well, I'm just too picky. Well, the fact of the matter is they're not picky enough and they're not honest enough. They're not picky enough because they don't really know what works and what they should pick and shouldn't pick. And so their fear causes them to put out all kinds of pissant little judgments when they really are not seeing through to the heart of the matter. So there's my fear and my judgments that are really a reflection of my fear of giving myself to someone. And if you go back to your father, you find that's the first time in life that you gave yourself to a man. And if that giving of yourself was betrayed, then you're going to carry that into any relationship to which you would give yourself. And I want to make a distinction. Giving yourself is not sacrificing yourself. Giving yourself is dedicating to going into that relationship when you're there fully. And it sounds to me like you've got a much bigger challenge to really give yourself to the relationship and damn the torpedoes. Let it happen. See if he's man enough to handle you, and see if he's man enough to handle you with enough of your own vulnerability available that he can respect your vulnerability and that he can deal with your best shots. That sounded enthusiastic.
It's scary and it's exciting too. I also don't want to I don't want Nelson to be a dumping ground either. You know, so it's like.
Well, if he respects himself, if he respects himself, he'll flush the toilet, put it back on you. If he doesn't, your disrespect for him will grow. Worry not. It'll get putrid and rot, or it'll turn into compost and be good fertilizer.
Okay. Okay, good stuff.
So, look, in summary, if you were going to be in a around-the-globe 24,000-mile road rally, where you were going to take a ship from point of land to point of land. And then you were going to drive over Asia, over the Ural Mountains, and over, I don't care, you know, where you go in Tibet. You're going to drive over mountains. You're going to go through deserts. You're going to have swamps. You're going to have all kinds of challenges. And you can buy any vehicle in the world you want. Would you go into the car dealership and just buy the prettiest one and hope it gets you around the world? No. You would drive the car as hard as you could trying to break it here. Because if you can break it here, then you know you don't want to take it on that tough 24,000-mile or whatever it is road rally around the world. So that's easy compared to marriage and life commitment. So drive the car hard. Just do it with as much honesty and responsibility as you can and follow our rules of engagement. Take 100% responsibility for your own satisfaction, 50% of the blame for conflict. Fight for things. Tell the truth. Acknowledge the truth in what the other person says. Drive that car hard, and we'll see what the relationship is made of.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, thank you. So, relationship. The crucible that burns away our impurities and the womb that nourishes our better properties and qualities to develop. Thank you for joining us for Bring Out Your Best Blog Talk Radio. Join us November 6th through 8th for our November Foundations Training. You can register at transformweekendtraining.com. That's transformweekendtraining.com. Also, we'll be hosting a monthly seminar on how to determine your personality style. You can register for that at seievent.com. That's seievent.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'm your host on Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio, Dr. Bob Wright. Go out, bring out the best in yourself and others, engage fully, and be the blessing and contribution to the world that you can be. Goodbye.